can make use of it. So he gives Lord Brahma that service to do. So, you know, just he engages him like that. And there's so many universes. So and you know, when, Krishna could do it himself, actually. So in that sense, it says you are independent in yourself and do not take help from others. He is engaging Lord Brahma, but he doesn't need him. If Krishna wanted to do it himself, he could just do it himself without the help of Lord Brahma. There's one in ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. There's in I think it's text 5. Prabhupada says, and then he's quoting from this Nirukti dictionary. You know, it's happened. It's as good as done. He doesn't need Lord Brahma. So in that sense, he is not taking help from others. Okay, but I mean, what about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu? You know, it's saying here in the purport that he enters this universe as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. I mean, you know, well, I mean, Krishna is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. You're not taking help from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Actually, when Krishna expands, there's all these different, you know, Vishnu expansions. It's actually, he's just having fun. That's just Krishna having fun, really. You know, it's just it's a pastime. And not taking help from anybody else because it's him. And maybe, who knows, one of these days Krishna might get bored of this whole arrangement and decide to do it another way. I don't know if there's any statement in the Shastras, that's, you know, anything saying that he can't do that. But anyway, that's, you know, it's a pastime. And so, yeah, Krishna is. He's fully independent. And he doesn't take help from others. Through his own potency, he creates this cosmic manifestation, and he enters into it. This is the Krishna show. You know, sometimes on television they have this show, the Andy Williams show, this guy's show or that guy's show. Well, actually, this whole world and life, it's actually, this is all the Krishna show. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pavartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna says, how does that start? I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Think about that for a second. I mean, that's a big one. That's a big statement. Krishna says, everything emanates from me. Not like, you know, a bit, something here, something. No, everything. Everything emanates from Krishna. All the spiritual, material energies, all the spiritual energies, everything emanates from Krishna. Back in the seventh chapter, he says, Etajyonini bhutani sarvaniti upadhadaya aham kritsnasya jagata prabhava palaya stanam. That of everything that is spiritual and everything that's material, know for certain that I am both its origin and dissolution. Okay? And then he goes on to say, and, you know, because once, so it's all coming from him, right? And but it's not like when it, once it emanates from Krishna and it's like out of his control. No. Mayi sarvamidam protam sutre manigana iva. Mayam, how's it go? No, matak patadam nanyat kinchirasti dhananjaya. Mayi sarvamidam protam sutre manigana iva. That there's no truth superior to me. And then he says, everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So, you know, everything's emanating from Krishna and then it's dependent upon him. It's all resting upon him as pearls are strung on a thread. The pearls are dependent upon the thread. If you break the thread, the pearls go all over the place. So in the same way, all Krishna's energies are depending upon him. It's like, you know, like you have these symphony orchestras, okay, and they have the conductor, you see. So there's all these instruments, you know, there's this, the woodwinds and the brass and the percussion and the stringed instruments. And, you know, I think I may have been to one or two concerts when I was a kid. They drag it, you know, when you're in school, they drag you to one or two of them. So you get some culture. But there's the conductor, you know. You know, and he's conducting the whole thing as he's going on. And, you know, he's in charge of the whole show. It's not like they're doing their own thing. They, you know, he's got control. They're watching him, and, you know, they're just following his indication. So it's the same thing. You know, these Krishna's energies, all the energies emanate from him, and then they're just kind of like following his direction. He's the maestro, the conductor of the whole thing. So, yeah, it's all, you know, through his potency, it's there, and the whole, he creates the whole cosmic manifestation, he enters into it, it's all under his control, as mentioned there. And it goes on to say here that those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative shastras, and who through practice of bhakti yoga are cleansed of all material contamination, can see with clear minds that although you, they can understand all this. So we're like the audience. You know, it's just like when you go to one of these big symphony orchestras, the conductor's there and all the, and the audience just gets to be there and appreciate the whole thing. So like the devotees, we're like the audience. And the non-devotees are like the people who didn't get in. They're outside on the street. No, but the devotees like the audience in the sense that, you know, by practicing bhakti yoga, your consciousness gets purified. And what happens, you actually are sort of like gradually, you get to understand how all these things are true. In other words, you don't realize anything different. It's like you actually get the realization of this, you know, the knowledge that's being presented in the Shastra. You see, the very same thing that's in the books, you start realizing like, whoa, this is true. And you get some, you know, experience, deeper insight into it like that. And that's why it's said here. It's not just those who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative Shastra and who, through practice of bhakti yoga, are cleansed of all material contamination. There's both things have to be there. Just the gyan is not enough. Just the knowledge is not enough. You've got to have purified consciousness. And the combination of those two things enables you to realize Krishna. It enables you to transform that gyan into vigyan. And there's that really famous verse Prabhupada quoted pretty frequently from the Padma Purana, Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Garayam Indire Seva Mukhe Hijivados Vayam Eva Spratya, that Krishna can't be understood by the blunt material senses. In other words, he can't be understood by somebody who's not a devotee, who's, you know, immaterial consciousness. But when somebody engages in devotional service and the consciousness becomes purified, then with those purified senses, spiritual senses, you know, you can start understanding this knowledge becomes, how's it go? Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. Is that verse, second and ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Itamutamam Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. That this knowledge is, this process of devotional service is the king of knowledge, it's the most secret of all secrets, and it gives direct perception of the self by realization. Pratyaksha. Which means, you know, direct, you know, realization like that. So you get that. And like Lord Chaitanya said in the Shishastakam, he goes, Chaito Dharpanam Arjunam Bhava Mahadavagani Navapanam Shraya Karava Chandrikavanam Vidya Varujivanam. That this Sankirtan movement, engaging in the Sankirtan movement, the result will be Vidya Varujivanam. It's a life of transcendental knowledge. In other words, the knowledge becomes alive. You know, when you actually start engaging in the process of devotional service, chanting, following the regulative principles, going out and preaching, then your consciousness gets purified and the whole thing becomes alive. When you're chanting, you're getting a taste. You're, you know, relishing the transcendental sound vibration, and you feel like there's like an excitement that's kind of generated. You actually start experiencing this knowledge. So that's what happens here. And that's what's being described here, that the devotees who are understanding, you know, in knowledge of the authoritative shastras and are practicing bhakti yoga, they get the realization, they can understand these, they get to they get the privilege, they can relish these transcendental pastimes of Krishna. So this is you know, very wonderful. And the foremost responsibility of somebody who's been this fortunate, you know, to come in contact with this Krishna consciousness and, you know, come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master and receive this knowledge and start practicing it. So the foremost responsibility of somebody who's been as fortunate as what we are, because we're really fortunate, is to try to give it to everybody else too. Try to help other people become fortunate. And, that's actually the opinion of the, you know, the acharyas. That's, you know, it's not just like my idea. That's what the acharyas say. And here's a very nice, this is a probably many of you maybe never even saw this book. It's one of these compilation books, Preaching is the Essence. It was done many years ago. But right in the beginning of the book, there's a few verses that he kind of, you know, that the author, or not the author, the person who compiled it, presents, as he calls it, a drop from the ocean of the nectar of the glories of preaching Krishna consciousness. So these are kind of like, you know, very important verses. And he says, I'll read a couple of them here. It says, spreading Krishna consciousness is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Therefore, his sincere devotees must carry out his desire. The devotees of Lord Chaitanya must preach Krishna consciousness in every village and town in the world. That will satisfy the Lord. It is not that one should act whimsically for his own personal satisfaction. This order comes down through the parampara system, and the spiritual master presents these orders to the disciple so that he can spread the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is the duty of every disciple to carry out the order of the bona fide spiritual master and spread Lord Chaitanya's message all over the world. Okay, so just remember that last sentence, okay? If you remember the whole thing, great, but at least remember that last sentence. It is the duty of every disciple to carry out the order of the bona fide spiritual master and spread Lord Chaitanya's message all over the world. So that's us. It's all of our duty. It's the duty of each and every one of us to do that, to carry out the order of the spiritual master and try to spread the message all over the world. And the result of doing that, in the next verse, you know, excerpt that he quotes here, is described here. It says, preaching is the best service to the Lord. The Lord will immediately be extremely satisfied by one who engages in the service of preaching Krishna consciousness. This is confirmed by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita, 1869. Nacha tasma manusheshu kaschin me priyakritama. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. If one sincerely tries his best to spread Krishna consciousness by preaching the glories of the Lord and his supremacy, even if he is imperfectly educated, he becomes the dearmost servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is bhakti. As one performs this service for humanity without discrimination between friends and enemies, the Lord becomes satisfied, and here comes the really big important thing, and the mission of one's life becomes fulfilled. Okay, so let's put those two together now. So we have that, we hear that it's the duty of every disciple to carry out the order of the bona fide spiritual master and spread Lord Chaitanya's message all over the world. And the result of doing that is that Krishna will become immediately extremely satisfied and the mission of your life becomes fulfilled. That's what Prabhupada's saying here. That was a purport from the Bhagavatam 7.6.24. The mission of one's life becomes fulfilled. Now, as if that's not good enough, listen to this next one. It says here, the members of this ISKCON society must always remember that if they stick to the regulative principles and preach sincerely according to the instructions of the acharyas, surely they will have the profound blessings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and their preaching work will be successful everywhere throughout the world. So, that's like the icing on the cake. So let's put all three of those together now. So the first one says that it's the duty of every disciple to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya all over the world. The second one says that if you do it, the mission of your life is going to be fulfilled. And the third one saying that if you do it, also, on top of that, you're going to be successful. So what more can we want? What more do you want than that? I mean, as devotees, what more can we possibly want than that? We got the instruction, what to do, and we're told that by doing that, our life is going to be successful. And on top of that, we're told that by doing that, not only is our life going to be successful, but we're going to be successful in the attempt to do it. You see? So, yeah, we should be really focused. And really focused and really take this seriously. You know, this is what my life is all about. My life is all about practicing Krishna consciousness. And above and beyond that, although that's got to be there, you know, trying to get it out there to everybody else. And should we be like, what should our mood be, you know? Well, let's hear what Prabhupada's mood was. You know, and it was like, right, our mood should, we should follow, you know, you always hear that expression, follow in the footsteps. So let's hear there's so many different statements, but let's hear, I'm going to read one statement that will give us an idea of Prabhupada's mood about the importance of preaching and the urgency of preaching. Just listen to this. This is actually an excerpt from a morning walk conversation that took place here in Los Angeles in 1973, I believe, on Venice Beach. So Prabhupada said at that time, he was walking with the members of the Bhaktivedanta Institute and Bhaktisroop Damodar and some other devotees. So Prabhupada on that occasion, he said, the whole world is running on a false theory that life is born out of matter. But that is not a fact. So how to defeat this theory? That is our business. We have to defeat this rascal theory. We have to challenge all these rascals and defeat them. We have to make a program because this is most misleading. The whole human society is affected by this misleading theory. We have to make program, go from place to place and invite all big men and scientists. That program we have to make. We cannot allow this nonsense theory to go on. We must do something. So we have to challenge, protest, defeat. This will be our work. Our worshiping of Krishna is our internal affair. Okay? So, you know, Prabhupada doesn't say it's not our affair, but it's our internal affair. You know, we're devotees of Krishna, worship Krishna. He says our worshiping of Krishna is our internal affair. He says, but the external affair, we need to establish this theory. Make plan how to meet them, how to defeat them, catch them on their throat. Prabhupada says, catch them on their throat. We are not ordinary so-called swamis and sadhus. We are going to give the world something which they forgot. See, so, you know, from this statement, we can get an idea of Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada's mood was almost like militant, you know, about preaching. And he was like, he wasn't just like, well, yeah, we also, you know, we should preach. It's a nice thing if we do that. No, his mood was like, you got to do this. This is like, we can't allow these rascals to get away with this. You know, they're misleading the entire human society. They're cheating people out of the opportunity of the human form of life. We're not going to let them get away with this. You know, over our dead bodies, they're going to do that. You know, so and Prabhupada's saying, we have to organize. We got to, you know, make a program. That's exactly what he said. Make a program. Let's get it together. We have to come up, you know, we have to challenge these guys, confront them, challenge them, try to defeat them like that. So that's our business. That's what we have to try to do. Of course, we're already trying to do it. And actually, this temple is you know, a good example of like, how would you say it, a pilot project. I mean, because, you know, we're here, we're a temple community, and we have the restaurant, we have the gift shop, and, you know, it's like that provides an economy. So we have people going out, distributing books, and doing different preaching activities, and, you know, it's supported by. So this is actually, this new Dwarka is actually really good in that sense, because it's, you know, as a whole, we are preaching. Everybody who's helping out in the temple activities, you can consider yourself, you know, you're a Sankirtan devotee. Like, for instance, I'm distributing a lot of books, you know, but I'm not even paying for all the cost of printing. Suvas is paying for the cost of printing, you see? So to say that means that, you know, Prabhu is paying. He's working in the restaurant. He's, you know, in other words, all the devotees who are putting their, you know, giving their time and energy into helping with the restaurant and the gift shop, they're contributing. They're making it possible for the, you know, for the profit, for the Lakshmi, so that others of us can distribute the books more liberally than we otherwise, you know, could. And so in that way, the whole thing is going on. You see? So also another point is that, you know, it's good to kind of be aware of this, and you know, in the morning when we say that prayer, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please send us some new Sankirtan devotees. That's important. I mean, it's important that we should, you know, we actually have to be, we're doing the activities. We have to desire new devotees. And if, you know, if you're uncomfortable with the thing Sankirtan devotee, like, I have two suggestions. One is, first of all, we can give a definition of what is a Sankirtan devotee. A Sankirtan devotee doesn't just mean book distributor. It does. It's broader, in other words. Sankirtan devotee includes book distributor, but it doesn't just mean book distributor. A Sankirtan devotee is also somebody who goes out on Harinam. A Sankirtan devotee is also somebody who just participates in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, just like what I was describing. You know, a new bhakta who comes and who's working in the kitchen, working in the gift shop or whatever, you know, you're a Sankirtan devotee. This is Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. So anything you do, you know, here, any energy you give to cooperating with the temple authorities, you're participating in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. So at least that's how I think. You know, so I say that prayer in the morning. I think it's a great prayer, you know, and I think we also, you know, we have to be. It's good that we all get on the same page about that. And if you're really hung up about Sankirtan devotee, just skip the Sankirtan. Just go, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please send us the same bleep devotees so we can, yeah. No, I don't mean to like, you know, be picking anybody, but I think it's the real point I'm trying to make where I'm coming from is I think it's like, it's good that we have that mood of that we're all feeling like, yeah, we want more devotees. You know, we want more devotees. We really, that's what we're doing all this stuff for. We want to make more devotees. Okay? So it's also another point that came to my mind is that, I'm just saying this because I feel it's like needs to be said. I'm trying to not like pick on anybody and not criticize anybody. Like for this next one I'm making, I could put myself on the top of the list. When people come, we have to make sure that they feel welcome. You know, that's really important. People have to feel welcome. Because people, at least I know myself, I don't like to be, and as I said, I put myself on the top of the list of people who don't do this because a lot of times during when the Sunday feast comes around, I'm not like as much as I should be, you know, with the guests and preaching to them and this and that, you know. That's the proper standard, and there's a lot of devotees who are doing that. But anyway, yeah, so people like to be where they feel welcome. I know myself, I've never conducted a survey or anything like that, but probably others of you feel the same way. If I feel I'm not invited someplace, I don't go. For me, that's one of the most horrible feelings, to go someplace where I'm not invited and then have to be kind of told, hey, you're really not supposed to be here, you know? Uh-uh. So, you know, it's just like you want to be where you feel welcome. I like... Yeah, except when that's different. When you're distributing books, then that's a different ball game altogether. But generally speaking, you know, you don't. If you know, you want to be people like that. They want to feel welcome. I know myself that in my joining, that was a big factor. That was one of the things that really helped me become a devotee, because I got the books and I liked what I was reading in the books. The philosophy attracted me. And by Krishna's mercy, I went to the Sunday feast, and when I got home, I was marching around my room chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and I even like felt, unless I'm just imagining things, I felt like I experienced a bit of a taste for the chanting. But one thing that really helped, all you know, these other things, was the devotees. I felt like the devotees wanted me. Like, the second devotee I can't remember if it was the first, second, or third. The one devotee I met, I've told this story before, so I'm not going to tell it, but... When I got a teaching of Lord Chaitanya, I used to work for Amla Bhakta at a Hatha Yoga studio he was managing in Midtown Manhattan. So one day I was going home from, if you call it work or service or whatever, and a devotee stopped me as I was trying to go into the subway on 59th Street and Lexington Avenue, and he gave me a teaching of Lord Chaitanya, which I gave a donation for, and then he asked me if I could give a bit more, and I gave another, I gave seven at first, and I gave another $4, and he said, could I give a bit more? And I gave another $2 or $3. And then he switched books on me. So, you know. Anyway, but I read it, and I started reading it right away, and I read it as I was on, it was rush hour. I was reading it like I was kind of, you know, like a can of sardines, and I was reading it, and I was reading it on the train walking. When I got off the train, I read it from the train station to the place where I lived as I was walking. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't even know if I understand this when I'm reading, but I really like it. You know. Anyway, I liked it so much, I read it till about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning when I, in my own cheating way, finished it. I kind of skimmed over some parts with Ramananda Roy and like that when it got a little too esoteric, but I really liked what I read. So I went back to the same place. I looked in the book, where do I, you know, how do I find these people? And it had an address, Tiffany Place, Brooklyn. I said, where is that? You know, and back in those days, you couldn't just Google an address. So I had no idea where that was. So I rang up directory assistance and said, hey, you guys give phone numbers. Can you tell me where a place is? I said, no, we don't do that. I said, we just give phone numbers. If you have a name and address, we'll give you the phone number. I said, okay, well, how would I do this? Just go to the post office, you know. So the next day was Saturday. I went to the post office. It was closed. So I went to the library, and, I tried to find it in Almanac. Where is such a, you know, I can't remember the number, but whatever it was, Tiffany Place, Brooklyn. No luck. So I just decided that, okay, I'll go back to the same place. I went back to the same place. As I was coming up out of the subway, a devotee was going into the subway, and he saw me, and he handed me a long stem rose, and he said, hey, can you give a donation? And I said, yeah, okay. I gave him a couple dollars. And I said, but, you know, I could see he was a devotee. He was dressed the same way as the guy the day before. So I said, but, you know, what I'm really interested in is, do you have any of those Srimad Bhagavatams? And he just about, you know, fell over backwards. Because, you know, 1973, who asked for a Srimad Bhagavatam? Anyway, to get to the point, so, you know, he said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. I said, well, how many can you give me for $30? He said, well, I could give you three. I got a first canto, part one, two, and three. I said, okay, it's a deal. So I gave him $30. He gave me the first three books. And then he was talking to me a little bit. And, you know, as devotees are by nature, he was smart. And he could sense, he said, wait a second, I think this guy's a bit more than the customer, you know. I think we got a live one here. So, you know, son, I read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It was really great. I really loved it. So he said, well, you know, he said, can I ask you a favor? I said, uh-oh, here we go again. You know, I was just remembering how the guy the day before got three raises and changed books on me. So I said, well, yeah, okay. And he said, look, could I just give you one of those books? Because this is like, you know, it's August 10 o'clock in the morning or something like that, 10:30 in the morning. He said, because these are the only three I have. If I give you all three, if I meet some other really nice people like you, I'm not going to have a book to give them. So if it's okay, but I'll just give you one. And tomorrow when you come to the Sunday feast, because he told me about the Sunday feast, I'll give you the other two then. And I thought, okay, you know. But I figured I gotta trust these guys. You know, the whole book is talking about love of God, love of God. So I gotta see, they gotta at least be honest, you know. So I thought, okay, I'll go with that. So in other words, he devised a trick to get me to come. The point is, getting back to the point, he wanted, you know, he was just one of the devotees from the temple, but he wanted me to come. So he devised this trick to get me to come to the temple, and it worked. You know, because I had to go to the temple the next day. If I would have walked off with all three books, I might have just thought, well, yeah, I could go and not go. But now I had to come because, you know, this guy had my books. I mean, I gave him $30. I only got one book. I wanted the other two. Got to get my money worth, you know. So I went to the temple the next day. When I got there, it was real, you know, devotees were really nice and friendly and everything. And they introduced me to Mother Divi Shakti. And finally, and she was, I saw that devotee when I was taking prasadam. And he goes, oh, you came, wonderful, you know, and he introduced me to Mother Divi Shakti, and she was really nice to me, really friendly, I mean, you know, flattering and nice, and she gave me the books, and she gave me a couple extra presents, like a little 45 RPM with the Govinda prayers on it, and, you know, Brahma Samhita, what we sing every morning, Govinda Jaya Jaya, and, you know, Govinda prayers, and a picture of a poster with Krishna and Balaram. It was the picture that used to be on the cover of the Krishna book, third volume, and I really liked it. Anyway, so, you know, once again, there's another person who's really nice to me. And then I got home and I told you I was, you know, did that thing. I was marching around, we were making chanting, and my parents came and they got all upset, told me to shut up, you know. And so the last point is that I rang the temple. And by this time, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And I was all excited, you know, because I thought, wow, this is it. I'm going to do it. Actually, in the temple earlier that night, I heard Kirtananda actually gave the lecture. And he really, I thought he gave a great lecture. And I remember thinking, during the lecture, I was thinking, yeah, this is it. These people, if they're really, because he made this one point, he said, you know, all the religions are saying that they're the only one, but in Krishna consciousness, the Bhagavatam offers a criterion by which you can judge for yourself which is the best religion. And he quoted that verse, Savai Pum Sampado Dharmo. That religion is first class, which awakens in its followers unmotivated, ecstatic love for God. So when he said that, I heard that and I thought, yeah, that's it. That's the goal of life, to develop unmotivated, ecstatic love for God. So I thought to myself, if these people are intelligent enough to help me clearly understand that that's the goal of life, maybe they also can help me make progress towards achieving it. So at that moment, I decided, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to become one of these guys. But I didn't have a timeline, you know. But anyway, when I got back home and I was marching around my room chanting and, you know, experiencing like a bit of a higher taste, I thought, yeah, why wait, you know. So I got on the phone at 1 o'clock in the morning and I rang the temple. And I started, you know, the devotee who answered, is some of you know him, Brijendra Nandana, God brother. And, you know, I was really excited and everything like that. And he goes, he listens to me for about 20, 30 seconds and he goes, by the way, do you have any idea what time it is? And I said, oh, well, actually, well, no, not really. Well, I suppose it's kind of late, isn't it? He said, yeah. I said, did I wake you up? He said, well, yeah, that's okay, don't worry. And he said, look, you know, it's, I could see you really. I said, well, what do you think? Can I come down? Can I? I was ready to come down right then and there. I was ready to just kind of, you know, hop on the subway and go down. He said, why don't you get a good night's sleep and, you know, come down in the morning. I think we'll still be here. You know, so I said, oh, okay, I guess. I realized I was kind of hyped up. So, but the point being that, you know, these different devotees, they, I could feel they wanted me. So that was a big part of the reason why I followed up, went, and was able to stay, because I felt that the devotees wanted me. And even when I got there, I, you know, they had this policy where you could stay for 3 days in what they had, like, they had like a halfway house, you know, for guests, an apartment. It was a few blocks away. And you could stay for 3 days there, and then they made you, then you had to go home and come from your home. So after the 3 days were up, because I lived in the Bronx, I the temple president was out traveling someplace, and so it was a devotee named Nitai who was in charge at the time. He was like the acting temple president. So I asked him, and he said, well, you know, we got this policy. You're only supposed to be able to stay for 3 days. And I said, well, what do you think? It takes me an hour and a half to get here, an hour and a half to, you know, back like that. And he said, oh, okay, okay. So he made an exception. You know, he made an exception and let me stay for an extra week until the temple president got back. See, so in other words, the devotees, like, they went out of their way. They bent, not a bent over backwards, I wouldn't say, but they, you know, I could feel it. These people are trying. You know, they want me to become a devotee, and that really helped a lot. So point being that people should feel like that when they come here. I guess, you know, everybody should feel when they come here that feel welcome and feel like the person should feel like this person is interested to talk to me and is enjoying my company. You know, that's important. It's a simple little thing like that. Everybody should feel like, yeah, these people like me. They like me. They see some good in me, and they're happy that I'm here. They're happy to talk to me. They like me. And then they'll feel, you know, they'll feel comfortable. They want to come here again. But if they don't feel that when they come, then why should they want to come more? So anyway, I got a bit on a tangent there. But anyway, that's a basic point. That's important. So I better stop because it's already late. But does anybody have any questions or comments about any of those points? Yeah, Prabhu, thank you.
You really made me feel like you wanted, you know, my friendship. You made me feel valued. You made me just, you made me feel really, I just felt elated. I was like, wow, because you were like one of the first devotees I actually had come in contact with on a real personal level, you know, especially going out on Sankirtan, you know. And I remember you gave me a book bag and you put the records, we were doing the records and we were doing.
I didn't pay him off. I just want everybody to know that. I didn't, you know, sorry, go ahead.
And I do have a question here. And I remember, you know, we had our BTGs, and you said, come on, Prabhu, and you just, like, jumped out of the van like you're jumping off the dock into the water, you know. And I didn't know what to do, and you said, come on, you know, and I just followed you. And I couldn't get in. I was really scared, you know, because I didn't know the methodology to distributing books, although I – you know, I had some experience with sales, but it just wasn't the same. And I remember you spent some time with me, and then I came running back across to the parking lot. Prabhu, look, somebody, I had the $10 in my hand. I'm running across the parking lot. Prabhu, look, somebody gave me a $10 donation. He goes, put it away and go get another one. So anyway, it was just really ecstatic, and I wanted to thank you because you know, that was a long time ago, and here, you know, here I am. I'm still trying, so I wanted to thank you. When it comes to preaching, when it comes to, you know, you were speaking about, you know, defeating or, you know, defeating other, let's just say preaching, you know. I know myself, I have to be careful about the self-righteousness, you know, and the proud and the puffed up and mood, but you still have to be like a lion when you're out there. So can you speak a little bit about, you know, when we're preaching, what is your mood?
Okay, well,
you can't be
briefly,
too much of a lamb.
Yeah, very,
you know?
Briefly. Just, yeah, like Prabhupada said, the worship of Krishna is our internal affair. Okay, also, we have to have this mood of, like, we have to, you know, as Prabhupada said, you have to, you know, defeat them, grab them by the throat. Sometimes that has to be our internal affair, too. You can't behave like that. I mean, maybe in certain situations you can if you're really an expert preacher and like that, but generally, like, when I'm on Sankirtan, nobody can... I mean, I'm feeling like that. You know, we got to. But you can't behave like that. It has to be also, that has to be your internal affair as well. Those feelings of, you know, aggressiveness towards, you know, the materialistic conception of life. You got to behave in a way that's attractive and, you know, that they can relate to, generally speaking. So, you know, you got to be very careful with that. We can't, in the name of, you know, like that type of statement, come off like fanatics, because then it'll just turn people off, you know. And it'll defeat our purpose. So we can internally, we know that we want to do this. You know, we have that resolve. But externally, we have to appear to people friendly, joking, smiling. You know, like that. They you know, they can't tell what our real attitude is towards their, you know, the things that they believe in and the values that they have. You know, that's basically it. I think I should stop there because it's kind of late. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.